Welcome back to Evolution of a Snake. I'm Zach.
And I am Madeline.
And you are listening to episode 3 of our End of an Era recap series, where we go through frame by frame the end of an era. But before we get into that, evolutionofasnake.com, because we sold out our Melbourne show on the Australian leg, the final leg of the Snares tour. Woo! So we've announced another show.
They really like us in Australia. And thank God.
The koalas are saying, come and hang out with us.
It's the koalas who are buying all our tickets.
If you come to our show,
I'm excited to see.
You get a koala cuddle. Mm-hmm. Isn't that what you want?
Oh, it's a dime a dozen in Australia. I bet everybody's cuddled a koala already.
Well, you can have another encounter live at our new Melbourne show on the 26th of February. And then we also have tickets still left for our Sydney and our Brisbane show. And Sydney meet and greet is sold out. Brisbane, we have surprises in store. So evolutionofasnake.com to get tickets. And if you're looking for our reactions to all of the era's episodes, patreon.com/riftologist. So that's all. That's my spiel. That's what I had to shake the cup for
today.
The
cup has been shaken. Thank you.
So we again are going to do our recaps of the episodes. I will give the time to Congresswoman Review.
Oh, thank you so much. Today on the docket for review by the council is episode 3 of the Eras Tour documentary. And the title of this episode is important because it was very deliberately chosen, and we'll be talking about it as we go through it. The title of the episode is Kismet. And I liked it when I saw it before I pressed play on the episode, and I liked it even more when I finished the episode because I said, you know what? That's probably the best episode title yet. Actually, incidentally, and I wasn't sure until after I watched it the second time to take my notes, but when I was watching it the second time, I was like, you know what? I think the first episode might be my favorite, but the third one I think is probably my second favorite, if not my favorite. I haven't decided yet. I loved it. I thought it was geniosity. And I clapped in my
chair. Very interesting. Kismet is a great word, and it's a great word for the Eras Tour. The dominoes cascaded in a line.
And the episode opens with one of the most kismet things that's ever happened in the history of the universe. Taylor in her sequin American flag t-shirt that she wore multiple times and paired with her white pants from Old Navy. I know Old Navy when I see it. That is head to toe Old Navy, and it looks amazing. One of the most iconic performances from her childhood. She's in a parking lot. I play my songs in a parking lot. Ever heard of it?
Tears.
Some of us have. It was Tears. And a montage starts of her younger years performances. It kind of like leads all the way up until she's like a teenage girl, debut, Fearless, that kind of stuff. And the montage is set to Invisible String. Kismet. Ever heard of anything called Kismet? Invisible String is about Kismet. You see how it's clocking to you? Actually, the needle drops in this episode were really, really delicious. Every single needle drop was like a delectable feast for my palate. Every single song they chose was like perfect. So Invisible String playing, we got this montage of Taylor, you know, opening her first guitar, doing this, you know, she's on the stage, she's at the talent show, she's at the gymnasium. And Andrea says very early on, she just knew she was going to have to work hard. She's opening for Rascal Flatts. She's, you know, going through from city to city. She's doing this, that, and the other thing. Andrea says she always knew from an early age exactly how she wanted things to be. And she was always planning what her headline tour would be like. Well, we knew that. We knew she was signing her name in notebooks. We knew, I mean, we have in the Lover Diaries, we have her, by the way, genius, never been done before, show stopping ideas of what she wanted to do for the Speak Now tour before it existed. And we saw all that come to life. She does have a very clear vision in her head about things. So I believed her 100%. Taylor knew from the get-go she wanted to have a castle on the stage. She knew that.
I mean, we see it with Torture Poets. She knew exactly what she wanted that to be before the album was even done. And I like to think of the idea of her creating with that in mind. Like, I think she creates with all of these things in the back of her head. Like, how would I perform this live? If this had a music video, what would it be? I think that is like a really interesting part of her creative process.
Yes, 100%. Andrea continues, I never heard her say the word fame or money. It was always just about the opportunity to go sing her songs and have everybody else singing those same words back to her. I cheered and I cried and I clapped.
We're never saying fame, but we're practicing our autograph in the signature book and planning our tour. You see?
Well, here's the thing is, it is kind of like ironic. People aren't going to sing the words to your songs if you're not famous.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like it just like it negates itself within itself. But I think what she's trying to say is like it was never about being like beloved. Like I need everybody to love me, or being like I need all the money in the world. It's like I want to sing my songs and I want people to be able to relate to them. It's what I think she meant. But
yeah, I want people to hear me when I speak.
Yeah.
And boy, did that prophecy come true.
And then Andrea says, you know, and we had this whole montage just building up, building up. I don't think that when you're doing that, running around to record labels, begging for a record deal, playing for Rascal Flatts, you know, going bus, tour, and bus, club, another bus, another club.
Another club, bus.
I don't think that you ever for a split second take the time to think it will become this. And it flashes to huge, larger than life stadium on the Eras Tour. And then title card. Nobody knew.
We cheer.
And that's Kismet. This is the first instance of Kismet in the episode. So obviously we already talked about that. It's using an invisible string at the start of an episode called Kismet. People don't just do that. That's not just something you come up with. That's something that could only happen in the Eras Tour documentary. It's a level of geniosity that they haven't seen yet. But also the Kismet here is kind of not necessarily something just that just like happened and it just kind of like fell into place. But throughout the episode, they keep presenting their situations, these situations where it's like, it was Kismet in the sense that I worked my ass off to get it. And we see that with Jeslyn's story. We see that with Taylor's story. And we see that with the Reputation bodysuit actually managing to be completed. All these things come together, just like Taylor says at the beginning of the, in her first huddle speech, all these things come together because we worked for it. And that's kind of the Kismet of the Eras Tour and why she's even as Taylor Swift in the first place. It's Kismet.
Period. Period. Everything is Kismet.
Everything is Kismet. So the next thing that we see as we start the episode is, you know, they're flash over a stadium and there's like a little title card and it says, at the end of the European tour, everything is taken apart and shipped back to the United States. It takes 6 weeks for everything to arrive. And we see crew taking apart the stage. And I love this part when they're taking it apart and confetti comes falling out of it. I said, that's power.
Kismet.
That's girlhood. That's Kismet. It's freaking Kismet. And we see people carrying big set pieces around to be shipped. Like everybody's working overtime. Let's get this shipped. Let's get this done. And it says the Eras Tour team gets a short break before heading to Miami to begin the very final leg of the tour. So it's happening. The final 18 shows are approaching. Taylor says, quote, the European tour was so intense that by the end, I was exhausted past a point that I can remember. So we need the break after Wembley to recharge not only our bodies and our energy, but our passion for giving that much every night. Hell yeah. You need 10 months off to replenish your energy after the kind of tour that she was doing in Europe. They needed 10 months off in between adding the Torture Poets set to the show, but they didn't have that. These people have been working, and 2 months off, it really is nothing in the grand scheme of things.
What I thought was so interesting, though, is that how, because the show is so intricate and complex and demanding, 2 months off can really put you on the back foot when it comes to getting back into it. And I think a really interesting thread throughout this episode was like Taylor's anxiety about having to reprise her role as the star of the Eras Tour.
Yeah, it's the way that you can completely check out, I think, is the thing. It's like you're in it. And when you're in it, that's all you're doing. And when you're out of it, you're fucking out of it. You're just not, it's not there anymore. You're at home. You cannot possibly be more out of it than you're not even on the same continent as where the show has been.
The stage has not even reached where you are.
No, it's taken apart. It doesn't even exist. So everybody's on break and we get to go home with a few of the cast and crew, if you will, of the Eras Tour. We go home with Amos first. He's gardening. This killed me. It was literally like seeing a teacher walk on a hind leg. Yeah, like a dog, a teacher outside of school, dog walks on a hind leg.
I've never seen him without a base attached to him.
He took the trash out. I was like, now we're not supposed to know about this. But he's at home with his kids. And this part, by the way, needle drop piece instrumental. Somebody was in the production room, the editing room, cooking when they were putting this episode together. It was crazy. We go to Matt Billingsley's house, and the first thing that he wants to do is make macaroni and cheese. That's exactly what I'd be doing. Biggest vat of macaroni and cheese available, and I'm eating it. He's just there with his wife and child eating macaroni and cheese. What else is there in the world?
That's after the Eras Tour, it's a simple pleasures, girl.
We go home with Jeslyn and she says, I love traveling. I love my job. It's the best. But everything's planned for us. And then you get home and you're like, what do I do? and you have to learn how to schedule things for yourself again. I thought that was really interesting and probably very true. It's like you get home and you're like, I don't have anywhere to be for like 8 weeks. What am I supposed to do? I just have to be normal. How do I be normal? How do I have a normal schedule? How do I go to bed at a normal time and wake up at a normal time? How do I do all that? I forget.
Yeah. And what wig do I wear? What clothes am I going to wear? You have someone right. on tour that whose job it is to sort all of that out for you. So to have to get back into your routine, I mean, Taylor can continue living it like that. She has a million people around her. She does live like this. She has minions and foot soldiers. But like when you're the backup singer, you get home, there's no one there to do your laundry. You got to do it yourself.
Yeah, you got to do it yourself. We see Karina. We go home with Karina. She is excited to sit at her home piano, which I can imagine just like being able to sit at your piano.
Ms.
Probably
piano.
Feels pretty delicious. And we go home with Tamia. She gets to go home where she lived with her mom and dad and siblings and her grandma. And production asks, are you going to get your own place? And she goes, yeah. And I said, well, yeah, because you have a check to cash. A check. There's a check sitting in the bank as we speak. So yeah, she's going to be getting her own place, I assure you. I thought it was funny they even bothered to ask. It's like, yeah, I think she's going to be moving on up, ladies and gentlemen.
To me, that highlighted how young some of these dancers are. Some yeah. of these dancers are like babies and they've just gotten like the highlight of their career already. Like this is crazy for them, I'm sure.
And another part I loved is we go see the guitarist Max Bernstein and he's like, I miss my dog. And the dog is like the ugliest little fugly little dog. He's so cute.
It reminded me of Gert. Okay. So I can need you to walk that back. It was the cutest dog you've ever seen in your life. I thought it was adorable.
Well, there is such a thing when it comes to dogs.
Ugly, cute dog.
There is such a thing as ugly cute. He is cute. His little tongue was sticking out and his little bug eyes.
Yeah, girl,
I miss that dog too.
No, she wasn't ugly.
No, we never said that. And I didn't say that. You see how that works?
That's true. I took it personally.
Okay, so we go from this, you know, oh, peace, so beautiful, so Georgina. Then we go to a New York City townhouse that Taylor owns with the worst decorations you've ever seen in your life. We need to talk about this. There's a giant art piece. It's prominent. You can't miss it. It is gigantic. And it's one of those ones where it depends on which way you look at it. One way you look at it, it's the American flag. And if you look at it from the other direction, it says love wins. Liberal queen. But it's the ugliest thing you've ever seen. It's so ugly.
It's so ugly. And a lot of speculations about like, oh, this is her place. This isn't her place. I'm pretty sure this is the townhouse that she bought next to her apartment where she houses her security staff and like a bunch of other people live. So it's possible that she allows them to decorate it or do whatever they want with it. But let me tell you, that Love Wins piece of art, that was a Taylor Swift installation made in like 2009. She was like, I did a no hate campaign and they gave me this and it's going there. So it's also in the All Too Well music video.
Oh, is it really? I've never noticed this.
You know, when she's walking down the stairs at the end, leaving her house as the successful author, that like landing foyer, the stairs that she's walking down is this townhouse. So it's
Love
also,
wins.
It's not Taylor's decorating style. It's very modern in a way that I haven't seen from any of her other homes. So this strikes me to me like, guys, this is the equivalent of her storage unit. It's not.
It's ugly as hell. Did you see the one that says like head, fist, head, punch, head, juice, head?
Girl.
That cannot be.
You know what it gives? It gives Chase Bank art in the lobby.
It's not real.
Jeff
but thank
Koons.
God there was real art to look upon because Joseph Cassell. Learned how to pronounce his name, Joseph Cassell. You heard it here first on Evolution of Snake. It is pronounced Joseph Cassell. Thank you. Joseph Cassell is there, and he has a rack full of some new and old pieces from the Eras Tour. And they're checking out my least favorite Fearless dress. It's the blue icy one.
That's your least favorite one?
I don't like that one because it doesn't look like it's a Fearless dress. It's blue. It's icy blue. And I just don't.
Right.
It doesn't fit with the other ones. The other spaghetti ones, I can really, really tolerate. But what's interesting
to me— I don't like
the
black one. Specifically the black one.
Oh.
She wore that for London
Night One. I kind of like that one. But nonetheless, so she's like flipping the fuck. I love this. 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 I love it. 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 That was
literally
what she's doing. She's flipping out over it. You know, they're going, oh, these are the new pieces, blah, blah, blah. And Taylor says, quote, nostalgia is a huge part of the Eras Tour. If you were 12 years old during the Red Era, you're going to remember certain things that you saw and certain things that you felt. It's my job to bring those feelings and those visuals back to you. Wardrobe is one way to do that. Yeah, and we knew that.
And my favorite moment is when he takes out the surprise dress and he goes, hello, Miami.
And where was the lie? He didn't tell a single lie.
It's just so like gay man in his 50s. Hello, Miami.
Yes. And period. He was right. He was right. So Taylor says that Joseph has been with her since she was 16. And so that was kind of a moment where you're like, well, that makes sense because who else do you want designing and styling the clothes that you're going to be wearing on the Eras Tour? He's the one. He's the guy who's been there the whole time. It just makes perfect sense. And Joseph says, quote, the Eras Tour is all about the fans. And the reason I'm able to do my job so well is because I am a fan too. What's your favorite song?
What's your favorite album? What's your favorite horrible look that you put Taylor in that didn't fit the vibe she was going for at the time?
Let's talk about that. Wango Tango. Let's discuss your arrest. Put that on the table. Let's talk about your arrest. Were people doing coke in your bathroom? Just say it. That's a Real Housewives reference.
Yeah, guys.
For anybody who's wondering, where did that come from? It's a Real Housewives reference. Nonetheless. So Joseph says that he and Taylor have a secret language and a way of understanding one another. And I believe that 100%.
No one else speaks that language. Silas around the world say, what are they talking about?
And it's literally like Simlish when other people are in the room. It's just like Joseph and Taylor. Happy to me, know I'm Queen now.
It's the Katy Perry. La boo wee boo boo bee boo.
So we get some like archival footage of Taylor and Joseph talking about clothes in like 2009. She's got her, you know, classic hair and everything. And she's wearing the blue dress that she wore on TRL in 2008, which I thought was kind of insane. I immediately recognized it because I wanted that dress for me. I bet Joseph picked that one too. And I like seeing it. And I like to see it. He picked a lot of things, hasn't he? He's picked a lot of things. Well, yes.
I loved her in the sequin blue gown, the enchanted gown. She looked Gorgina.
Absolutely Gorgina. He says that they wanted to be reflective and sentimental on the Eras Tour and tie in designers they've used from the beginning. Well, yes. What else are you supposed to do? This is all information. I wanted this information, but I knew it.
Mm-hmm. He boots with the Eras Tour styling. I will give him that. The Eras Tour styling. House down boots. Even if I didn't like the color combos, the outfits were all right. And for that, I'll be forever grateful.
Yeah, no, I think one of my favorite parts about the Eras Tour was definitely all the outfits. Like they were very like pitch perfect. And it really is the only one that I'm like, I feel like it does not belong here is again, that icy blue Fearless dress. It just doesn't look like Fearless to me. It doesn't remind me of Fearless. It's a fearless dress to me.
But it's not a Fearless color. I mean, but remember also her blue dress for Speak Now? Like, I love it. It's gorgeous. But Speak Now isn't blue. Taylor has an obsession with blueifying everything. I think that was because she had all the costumes remade for the 1989 announcement night. But then she kept wearing them. And I was like, Fearless and Speak Now aren't blue, though. Do you know that?
Yeah, you can't just make the 1989 special clothes and then keep wearing them. Because we're not talking about that anymore. And where was the special outfit for Speak Now TV? We didn't see one. Not a one.
Why wasn't everything purple at Speak Now? Just a question.
We know why.
She don't care.
So one of my favorite quotes in the episode comes in this scene, and she's talking about how much her feet hurt because she's wearing her Louboutins all night long. She says, quote, dancing all night, yeah, my feet ache, but I'm wearing Louboutins. It's a privilege for these feet to ache like this. Say it again.
Well, yes.
Say it louder.
Well, yes.
You have to say
that's
that.
Devil Wears Prada.
You're wearing your Louboutins. Yes, well, the devil does wear Prada. Mm-hmm. She does. Thank you so much. So when he's going through the rack and he's showing off all the clothes, he's like, oh, Roberto Cavalli. And he pulls out the beautiful surprise dress. And then he rips it open. Velcro. And I was like, ah! It makes perfect sense. And it had to be so. Like, you understand immediately why it is. But Velcro on a Roberto Cavalli dress sent me into the stratosphere. The rip of it. It had to be done.
Purpose made for stage.
It was like a Frankenstein attack. They said, we're going to do something that's never been done to a Roberto Cavalli dress, and we're going to slap some stickies on it. Perfect. He goes through and he's showing off more clothes and more pieces. Gorgeous, gorgeous, beautiful. And they get to the OG bodysuit. And the Versace bodysuit favorite child allegations continue. And I don't see why they should stop. She loves that bodysuit and that specific bodysuit too, the classic. And she should. I think that's the one that people most associate with the Eras tour. And I think it's the one that a lot of people think is like the outfit from Eras because it's in the promotional pictures. It's on the cover of the thing. When in Indy, when they put her on the side of the building, she was in the OG Versace bodysuit. She likes that bodysuit.
She loves it.
She loves it.
I mean, she said
she
feels like she can do anything when she gets into it. When she gets into it, she's like, doesn't matter how sick I am, once I'm in that, that's my armor. Well, yes.
She claimed that it could heal her from having the stomach flu. I'm going to tell you something. If you have the stomach flu, you should not be putting on the Versace bodysuit.
Stomach flu mentioned too many times. Stomach flu mentioned too many times.
She's saying it. I'm telling you, she had the stomach flu on the Eras tour once, and it traumatized her.
She was like, I've been shitting.
It would traumatize me.
Well, because she has no breaks. She has no breaks. So, like, if she did need to go to the bathroom really quick, when? In a chamber pot? Probably.
Dehydrated, cooking up there, and you're in the Versace bodysuit. I can't think
Maybe
of something I want to be wearing less. And that's why it's not mentioned. She's cooking. Can you imagine? Okay, it can't have been Singapore. She wouldn't have made it. She wouldn't have made
died.
It. Like, literally,
I think she probably would have died.
It would have been cancellation o'clock. That is crazy. But nonetheless, she says, the Versace bodysuit can take me from being utterly exhausted. I'm just like, nope, if I'm wearing this, I got to level up. You do.
And
I mean,
she
you're
does
wearing
every
the
time.
Gorgina Versace. And she does every time. It's one of the, it's like a power outfit, you know? She zips into it and she says, I can do absolutely anything. I'm Superwoman. It's like the Superwoman pose, but it's a Versace bodysuit.
The pink one is still my favorite.
It's the best one. But we see a clip of her walking in that orange one, the new one. And we see her like walking in and she's like strutting. Her stuff. Hi. She looks
hi.
Really, really good. No, literally,
it was so weird to see her doing her stage strut in like a normal environment.
Yeah. And she's, you could tell she's like, this is, oh, I was like, she's got the eyes in the mirror. I was like, I was loving it. I really
needed
was
to be there.
La Vida Loca. And I love the part where they're tinkering with like different coats for the Tortured Poets outfit. The black one was so wrong. Like seeing her in it,
so
I was like,
wrong.
I can't even look at this. And then the second she puts on the white one, it's just absolutely perfect. Gorgina, absolutely never been done before, show stopping. You know instantly what the look is. She knew it too. She knows sometimes. She does
sometimes,
know sometimes.
When it comes to tour fashion, generally she gets it right.
Yeah, actually, I can't think of like a single tour where I thought the clothes are not good. Like a whole tour. Can't even think of one.
Always
not
good.
Always good. It's always been good. Thank you so much to Joseph Cassell for that. And to Taylor for that too, because, you know, she's the hammer. She's the hammer. She's the one who decides what stays and what goes. So thank you guys. And then Joseph starts talking about like the impact that the clothes have. And I thought this was a really interesting part. He says, when I'm working with T, and I like that he called her T. I thought it was
never
really
heard anyone call her that before.
I'm only thinking about the effect it has on her until I step into a stadium and I'm blown away. Thousands of people dress in a way that reflects one of Taylor's looks. And as he's speaking, they show this like montage of people in the crowd wearing the exact outfits that they were just trying on and workshopping and messing around with. And he says, the commitment the fans have is beyond the music. There's a connection on a deep soul level with Taylor. And I just thought, you know, I've never really thought about being the person who styles the clothes, who is in a room with Taylor going, this is great, this is bad, work on this, doing the edits, taking weeks, sometimes months to like put together these outfits, and then getting to like go to a show and look out into a crowd and seeing people emulate them because they love them so much. Like what that would mean as like the stylist and the designer as well. And the seamstress, the person who has to like make the reputation bodysuit work at the last possible second, to see people being like, we love it. It's amazing. It must be very powerful. The Eras Tour is powerful.
It's interesting to me to see what they perceive to be the most high impact Eras outfit. And to them, obviously, maybe this was just a good segue into the reputation bodysuit part, but they were like, this is the look. First of all, because it didn't get any variations. But also, they showed a lot of montages of people replicating it. And when I think about it, that is the most replicated like tour outfit that I saw. And the funny thing about it is that shit ain't easy to make. 9 times out of 10 that I saw it, it was botched as fuck. But then you saw a good one and you were like, wow.
I think I was watching it, and like when I thought about the people that I've specifically seen replicating that bodysuit, I feel like I've seen a lot of men replicating it, because I think it's one of the outfits that can very easily become non-binary. If you just tweak it a little bit, it can all of a sudden be something that anybody can wear, no matter what your gender is. And it's not a huge deal at all. So I was like,
you could just do the tank top. You could just do the pants.
Yeah, you can just like recreate it any way that you want to. So I was like, I guess I was surprised when he was like, the Reputation was the monumental outfit. I was like, well, I in the sense that it was the hardest one. I think it was definitely like, if you're gonna recreate an outfit, the Reputation outfit was easily one that you had your mom in there sewing.
Because it was sequin snakes.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very, very, very hard to do. I saw some really good ones, and I did see some kind of funny ones as well. And then I saw ones that were just like an homage. I liked the homage ones. You know what I mean? Like,
me too.
I didn't try to recreate the bodysuit. I just kind of like emulated it, sort of like the way that the backup dancers look. Like, it's an emulation of the outfit. It's not the actual outfit. But she's still the icon. And again, it was because there was only
one. She's the moment.
There was
only one.
So we're showing the montage of fans on socials talking about how there's only one of the rep bodysuit, and everybody's waiting for her to debut a new Reputation bodysuit. Well, cut to Joseph and Taylor and the Love Wins art piece trying on the new gold bodysuit. And she's Gorgina, but there's a few problems with the stitching. How it's put together, it doesn't quite fit her right. The boob cups are in the wrong place. And she says it doesn't feel right. And she has to be athletic in it, and it's just not going to work. If it's uncomfortable for her to wear, I think she's just like, I'm not going to wear it. Because, like, I have to be up there. There are so many things that are
already... She's got to get down on her knees. Right. She's got to whip her hair back and forth. It's a lot of issues going on.
So after she says this, Joseph actually gives some insight, and I've always wanted insight on why this happened. He gives some insight on the original and what's different about the new one. So Joseph says, quote, the original catsuit was made from a different fabric, and that was all the fabric that there was in the world. So we had to recreate the fabric for the second one and for this one. And we thought we could fix it, but there was no time for them to actually recreate a new one in time for Miami. They just couldn't do it. And it's like, okay, see, now...
What fabric is this? It's the golden fleece.
It must be. It's like some kind of cat suit. I've always wondered, because when I look at it, I'm like, I would imagine that it's stiff. But it has to be something that moves. Like, she has to be able to move in it. I do think it's kind of a special fabric. Plus, it's like hand done. Like, it's very intricate. So, like, getting all of this insight into the outfit, I was like, now I understand why there was only one. Now I understand. And it's like, it was such a big deal to get this new gold one. And I thought it was really interesting to see Taylor being disappointed. She's not mad.
Get to see her not having something go her way. I'm sure she doesn't hear. They couldn't do it in time very often, because she always loves to execute her surprises at the last minute, and they go off without a hitch mostly. But that was interesting. I also still think green would have cleared. The gold is gorgeous, but green?
We were saying green. It's like, did you only not do green because it's what everybody was saying and you wanted to do something different for the diva? I think it should have been green. But nonetheless, gold is gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
Gold is gorgeous, but she was really excited for this big reveal for the next leg of the tour, and it didn't seem like it was going to come together. Or will it? Stay tuned. Stay tuned. Next scene, we go home with Mike Meadows. And Mike Meadows has been touring with Taylor since she was on the Fearless tour. It's actually funny, because I used to, when I was a teenage girl and I was really deep in the Taylor fandom, I used to hear the name Mike Meadows all the time. And I was like, you know what? I actually can't remember the last time I heard the name Mike Meadows. Like,
he wasn't
just
a
not
famous member of the agency.
No.
It's funny, because there's some of them that were famous and like fans knew, but people like Mike and the co-band leader, who's the other guy that we talked about at the beginning making his mac and cheese, he's been there forever.
Oh,
and
Matt
I also
Millingly.
Is he also... Yeah, he also has been there forever, and I was always kind of like, what's your name? I know you, but I don't know your name.
Yeah, And it's just like interesting that the people who stick out, I think he's just like a family guy. And he like, mm-hmm. you know, he goes on his tour and then that's how he makes his money. And then he goes home and he's not like a fame sort of a, let me sign autographs at the airport kind of a guy. As opposed
Paul Sidoti not
to,
mentioned.
yeah, but we have not seen Paul Sidoti yet. Maybe
not
he
once.
Didn't want to be in it. Maybe he's like not that, like I'm kind of like not into the camera being in my face. Who knows?
Well, I've met him. And I can remind everyone that he probably wouldn't come across very well on camera. He's not very nice. Out of all the agency members.
He wasn't nice.
Mm-mm. But you know what? That's his right.
You need to always be remembering that. It's his right. It's his right. Wait, this was at the Singapore airport, right?
Yes. To be fair, I was accosting him at the Singapore airport when I was 17. So there is potentially a reason why.
Mm-hmm. Period. So we're at Mike Meadows' house. He's playing basketball with his family. And he's been touring with Taylor since she was on the Fearless Tour, since the very first tour. And he shows us his Taylor wall, which is full of plaques that Taylor has given everyone at the end of each tour as like a thank you. And they're like commemorative. My favorite one is the Fearless Tour one that has all the ticket stubs. And this leads me into my... Oh, we're going to rob him. By the way, we're going to rob you, Mike Meadows, just so you know. Mm-hmm. We've seen your house. We're going to come
around. We're going to take your doll. Thank you.
We're going to take it all. I am so envious of that Fearless Tour plaque because it has the ticket stubs. I miss the ticket stubs so bad. I love commemorative, like keepsake things like that. And the digital ticket thing, you know what? At Reputation Tour, my digital ticket almost didn't work and I almost didn't get into the show.
There are ticket stubs from Speak Now for sale on eBay for like $400, by the way.
Just the stub.
Just the stub.
Mike Meadows. Rob.
We're coming.
He's on my Rob list. But I thought it was so... you can't tell where it is in his house. It's next to the staircase. But it's like, this could be in like his home studio. This could be somewhere else. Like, it doesn't look like it's the main staircase in his house. But still, it's like a whole wall. This is his job. This is the work that he's been doing. He's been working with Taylor. That's what he's done for almost 20 years. Isn't that crazy?
Cuckoo.
It's diabolical. And I really liked this. And then he goes with his wife upstairs. They go to his daughter Sophie's room and he pulls out this artifact from the closet. And it's a guitar that Taylor made for her, Sophie, for her first birthday because she was born while they were on tour together. From the picture of Taylor with the baby, it looks like it may be the Red Tour.
It was the Red Tour. Mm.
But nonetheless, so she used to paint guitars for people all the time. She famously did this for Perez Hilton. Just so you know, something I'll never forget.
I forgot
something
that.
I'll never forgive.
I'm forgetting it now.
But she used to paint guitars for people all the time. And so on this guitar, it's like painted sky blue and there's flowers on it and there's like paper mache. She removed the strings too and replaced them with ribbons. So it's like a non-playable guitar. It's literally an art piece. And she has pictures of Sophie with mom. It says, she loves you. Sophie with dad. He loves you. And then Sophie with Taylor as a baby, and it says, and I love you. And I said, you know what? I'm glad that they love this, and I'm glad that they thought it was so cute. I think it's so crazy. I was like looking at it, and I was like, this is kind of bizarre. It's unique.
It's unique.
It's unique.
I love that. If I was
and
Sophie,
I
would be gagged.
No, and that's exactly why she did it. At the end of the day, like, they love it. You could see Mike Meadows was like tearing up. Holding it.
She's the coolest girl at school forever and always.
She has a guitar that won't play.
She needs to watch her back though. Because her friends are going to come into her house and try and take that. Yeah, Rob list. But we'd leave that behind. We'd take the plaques.
So it's an adorable artifact from kind of like the early days of Taylor. But she still kind of does do stuff like that. Now I send their babies presents. Ever heard of it? These are the kinds of presents she's sending. She's a gift giver. She is a keepsake giver. She's a crafter. Yeah, so there's a crazy guitar in Mike Meadows' house, and he kept it for all time, and it's immaculately kept, too. Thing is, like, what, 13, 14 years old? Looks brand new, because he's kept it so well, because they love it. It meant a lot to them, so I have to clap, and
as
I have to cheer, as they should. So, after she talks about this, we see footage from all the way back in 2009 of Taylor and some of her longtime band members, like Mike Meadows, like Paul Sidoti. He's in the footage. He doesn't want to talk, but he's in the footage. We see Amos, and Taylor says, it's so wonderful being able to carry a professional family with you as you go through phases of life, as you go through ups and downs and heartbreaks. And after she says that, needle drop, hoax, instrumental, everybody moved so hard. I leapt out of my seat the needle drops went absolutely ballistic. And the instrumental
the song
for Hoax
are crazy.
Yeah. It plays over a montage of the band and the dancers and the crew all having fun and being together. And it's like slow motion. And it's like, man, I wish these were my friends. I'll tell you what. I need to be hanging out with the Eras Tour crew expeditiously. And Amos says, quote, "There is such a special bond among the touring family. They're the only other people really in the world who know what this is like." And Jeslin says, "They're even together all the time before the show and after the show and on the off days." And she says that that's not normal for like a touring crew to spend 24/7 together. You'd think, I want to get the hell away from these people at the earliest possible convenience. Not the Eras Tour crew. Mm-mm. They want to spend
family.
Every single second together. It's a family. When you're here, you're family. Olive Garden, baby. Jeslin says, quote, "It's like she's handpicked these incredible people to be a part of this family. Kismet." Ever heard of
she
it?
She has.
Kismet. So Taylor then says, "Jeslin is one of the most talented, resilient, loving people I've ever been around. And she was the newest addition to our backup singers. Apparently she started on the Reputation tour. A beautiful time to begin your career as a Taylor Swift backup singer. Reputation first show is such a flex. Absolutely incredible. But we discover as the scene goes on that Jeslin actually got sick on tour." So Taylor says, "When Jeslin got sick, it was the first blow that the tour family experienced emotionally. It was completely unfathomable to us." So we find out that Jeslin was actually diagnosed with breast cancer while on tour. And she says, "Every weekend we had a show. So I still flew to the next city, did a show with everyone. And in the middle of the week, when we weren't doing shows, I would fly back to LA and have biopsies and learn what I had to do treatment-wise and then hop back on stage and pretend like nothing was happening." It's like, I can't even imagine what that would be like. The emotional toll, first of all, of discovering that you're sick, and then the toll of I'm going to play shows and acting like I'm so happy and having the best time of my life. And meanwhile, during the week, I am trying to figure out what radiation is going to be like, what treatment I have to do, and like what's going to happen. The unknown is looming over my head, and I'm up there saying, best believe I'm still bejeweled.
It's hard.
I can't even imagine it. It's hard. So Taylor said, "I'll never forget when she told us everyone was just in shambles. And it's all about the not knowing." Jeslin says, "When I let Taylor know, she came storming in with hugs and crying and just saying, I'm so sorry. And her mom said, you just take care of you and we'll be here when you're ready." When you're here, your family, Olive Garden, baby. They really are kind of like the kind of narrative of how everybody is like so close together and how this really did become a family. I mean, the Eras Tour was kind of like a crucible. If it wasn't for the fact that all these people got along really well, I think there would have been more mishaps with the tour. But luckily, everybody kind of really was like a family. I actually do kind of believe them just because of the way that I've seen in this documentary and even before. Everything that I know about the tour is like, I do think that these people all really genuinely care about her. So it wasn't a surprise to me that when Jeslin had to leave for 6 months, it was not a problem at all that she could come immediately right back. But she says she had to leave tour for 6 months to do chemo and surgeries and deal with all the fallout of the treatment. She had skin issues on account of the treatment. She lost a good chunk of her hair. And it's never said in the documentary, like, how important her hair was to kind of like who she is and like how she likes to present herself to the world, how much she loved her big, beautiful, curly hair. But the way that it's treated in the documentary, you can just tell she loved her hair. And it was really, really hard for her to have to go through this experience for a multitude of reasons. And having to not be able to have that big, luscious hair anymore was just kind of like one of the really, really difficult parts about it. She lost about 75% of her hair, she said. And as she was going through that, she'd log on to Swift Stream, just like the rest of us. Just like the rest of us.
Just like us normal folk.
And she said she would watch her friends perform the shows without her. So she was literally like yearning to be at the Eras Tour as she was going through this whole experience. And I think many people can relate to that. Many people who weren't working on the Eras Tour, but for whatever reason couldn't be there. For any number of reasons, I think you know what it feels like to sit there on Swift Stream and be like, I would give anything to be there. I thought it was powerful. Been there. Taylor says, we just wanted her to know that no matter what, if she wanted to come back, she could. So then we see the video of her ringing the bell after completing the treatment, a huge fucking deal. And she says, how quickly can I get back on tour after I'm done with radiation? She finished radiation, did a little bit of training, and then got on a plane as soon as she was able to again. She was back on tour in just a few months in Australia, which is crazy. She wanted to be there so Superwoman. Bad. And Taylor says, the will to come back and do the hardest show ever. None of us could believe it. I still can't. So I kind of felt like there was a lot of kismet in this scene, depending on how you look at it. Obviously, nobody's ever going to say getting diagnosed with breast cancer is kismet. But what is kismet to me was the tenacity of Jeslyn and like the deep passion that she has for performing, to the point where she's on a plane to start performing again the second she can after completing radiation treatment. It's kind of a different kind of kismet, sort of like how Taylor talks about how the Eras Tour was just like, it's not pieces falling into place. It's tenacity. It's hard work. It's wanting it. It's passion. It's kismet that Jeslyn made happen. Because she loves the Eras Tour and she loves being on stage so much. And it was the same with Taylor at the top of the episode. It was never just something that happened because of luck. It was tenacity and drive that put Jeslyn back on the stage and it put Taylor to where she is now. So I kind of liked that sort of matching them up a little bit, like hard work, tenacity, wanting it, et cetera, et cetera.
Something that gets more interesting in episode 4 as well that I think speaks to this is, I think, you know, Taylor's a good boss because it's like top down mission. And this is always like, they say this about founders and like VCs and in entrepreneurs. It's like, if the person who started the operation does not have a vision for exactly how it should go, nothing is ever going to go right. Things are going to go wrong. The wheels are going to fall off. Even if you have the best and brightest people in the world helping you, if the leader doesn't have like a very specific aligned vision of what they want the project or the enterprise to be, it's not going to work. And Taylor, I think, was so clear. It's so clear from everybody that speaks about the tour. They all understand what this means, not even really but to Taylor, but to the fans. They know that the fans are coming dressed to the nines. They know they're coming for the best night of their lives. They understand that what they're doing is very important and it holds a lot of weight. And so I think everybody treats it like the Eras Tour, which as they should.
As they should. And I definitely think Taylor, she sets the pace. And the pace
top
is
down.
This is it. This is what we're doing. And everybody just kind of like immediately catches on to that. It's like just a whole vibe to the entire tour. I wish I was there.
Yeah, totally.
I wish I was there.
What are you talking about? We were there.
We were. So after this scene, we cut to Taylor exercising, wearing her solid gold chain. She's whipping the ropes. She's doing her pull-ups, and she's complaining the entire time. She hates it. She hates being there. And this scene, we get a Shake It Off needle drop. Shake It Off TV, which, okay, fine. But it was a Shake It Off needle drop, and it goes crazy the entire time. But Taylor says, quote, there are a lot of things that we pulled off on this tour that I've never even attempted on past tours. I think the longest show I ever did before was 2 hours and 15 minutes. I never would have believed you if you told me we were doing a 3-hour show. Now, saying that is one thing. Doing that physically is another. I've never worked out this much in my life. It's horrible. I had to up my game in terms of physical training. 6 months ahead of my first rehearsal, running on the treadmill at the tempo of the songs that I was playing while singing them out loud. You just don't want them to see you panting. Period. She said, you don't. And what I liked about this scene is that Taylor presents it as something she's doing to meet a career goal. I want to work out this much, no matter how much I despise doing it, because I want to be able to be strong and healthy and capable enough to perform this show every single night. And it's not about looking a certain way. She never once mentions the way she needs to look. It's about being strong. It's about being able to do it. And she doesn't like doing it. She hated doing it. But she did it not to change her body in terms of how it looks, but to change her body in terms of what it is capable of. And I loved the framing of it. Like, I need to be able to do this. And it's never mentioned like, oh, I need to be able to fit into my bodysuit. She never says that, because that's not what it's about. It's about
and the kind of workout that she's showing is not the I need to be skinny obsessive workouts that you see from like models in the gym. She's doing like hybrid athlete training, like getting her heart rate high and carrying heavy weights and doing pull-ups. Like this is with completely with the goal of strength, not with aesthetics.
And she looks really good doing it. She might hate it, mm-hmm. but she's got her ponytail in, gold necklace on.
Full beat.
Little matching
full beat
set.
To sweat
full
her ass off.
Beat. It amazing. And I clapped and I cheered the whole time.
Oh, and she's cheering. A beast, by the way. She's killing those battle ropes. Like, she's really, really fit.
I was like, mm-hmm. okay, period. Okay.
Well, yes. Beat me up.
So Taylor is not the only one who has to get ready to go back on tour. We go and visit the band and the dancers and the backup singers a little bit more. And everybody's practicing. They're all working hard, you know, playing the guitar. Got to make sure I remember how to do all the songs. Got to remember my dancing, blah, blah, blah. They have to be able to be ready to get back on tour after 2 months off. And well, baby, Miami approaches. Taylor pulls up to Hard Rock Stadium in a very familiar outfit. It's so funny. Hideous. I recognized it immediately.
Yeah, from her
TikTok. I was
TikTok.
Like, oh, I know what's going on. And she talks to who I presume is a social media manager of some kind about a video
tour
that she wants to film. Tour photographer. And it's a video that she wants to film. And it's a video we've all seen. She walks out.
With
she's
the
got
cat.
A hat. She got her sunglasses on. I'm back in the office. She's got her little yellow sweatshirt on. She had it on backwards and they had to reshoot. just the usual. It's like, what's going on, girl? What goes on at home? You're just getting
she
dressed
She calls Olivia her best behaved cat, which killed me because we know that. We know that to be true. Benjamin,
oh,
you're rambunctious. Meredith is liable to attack Taylor at any given moment.
Yeah. So Olivia, it's all up to you, girl. You get to be the star because you
and
know how
great.
To behave. And she's great. She just sat there.
She's exactly used to cameras she to from when she was a kid and she was being dragged out of the house.
I remember that. She would just be walking out with the cat in her hand.
Bizarre.
Bizarre.
We need it again.
So cute moment. We get to see her film her TikTok. I like seeing the process, but it's not that interesting of a process because who among us has not filmed a TikTok? At this
you
point,
all know what
I'm
it's
asking
like.
You. Who among us? So at this point, in the documentary and in life, there's only 18 shows left of the Eras Tour, which is crazy. I can't even imagine how that must have felt. Amanda described it as bittersweet. I would think, I would be like, if I was Taylor, I'd specifically be like going into-
I think
into,
tragic, torment, KMS. That's how I felt when the Eras Tour ended.
And it's still happening to me as we speak. I'm still not over it. So backstage, Taylor is kind of kicking it with Andrea and Tree Payne. And Tree says, I keep thinking it's a show day. And Taylor says, it is a show day. In my brain, it has to be a show day. I have got to land, she says, which I think is really interesting, even though it's just a rehearsal day. I have got to do a full run through because it's like, I can't remember a single part of the show. It's just completely, I think she's panicking. I
think she seems scared.
We see this.
She seems genuinely scared.
As we like go through the episode, it's like, I don't know. I'm messing up. And it's like, she's not actually messing anything up. She's like very much in her head about it. And I think it really showed how much she cared about the show. Even at 100 shows later, it's still like, I don't want to mess up anything. It's still as important to her that everybody gets the same Eras Tour experience as everybody else. So I kind of really enjoyed seeing her. Not that I enjoyed seeing her panicked, but you know what I mean. I enjoyed seeing her care
so human.
Much. She's mm-hmm. human. So Andrea and Tree are gagging to see the new Reputation fit. They're like, we want to see it. Shake your dread, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And Taylor is like, well, don't get too excited because it may not work out. Well, you thought. Cut to Taylor trying it on and discovering that it fits. And literally the whole place erupts. Everybody's gagging. Mm-hmm. Everybody's losing their minds. It looks incredible.
As they
she
should.
She's strutting out. It looks amazing. Diana, the seamstress, is to thank for this miracle occurring. She fixed the entire thing, specifically the biggest problem with it, which was the boob cups being like down here when they have to be up here. It looks amazing. It looks absolutely perfect. Gorgina, no notes. Everybody was cheering.
And so would the crowd.
So they start rehearsal. It's the first rehearsal back to it all. And it's fun seeing them performing so seriously to an empty room. Nobody is acting like this is just a rehearsal. They're saying we're on stage and there's people watching. They pretend to make eye contact with people. I was like,
I would
this
love
is
to see
crazy.
That show. I would love to see that show.
So Andrea gets a voiceover here and she says, quote, as we were getting ready to go back into the shows again, Taylor was like, Mom, I'm really worried. I'm trying to get back in my mind and run the show. And I get to certain spots and it just stops. And Andrea told her, don't worry about it. You're going to get back on the stage and everything will come flooding back. I hoped it would. I didn't know that for sure.
Come on now. We've seen this before. Now. We knew it was going to happen.
Taylor's a seasoned professional. She really does get in her own head so much. But we understand why. Because they start to talk about how technical the show is. This show isn't like, oh, we just fly by the seat of our pants around here. No, we stage manage the shit out of this show, she says. We're dealing with lots of production elements, lighting, pyro, screen content, moving floors, confetti, costumes, choreo. There's so many moving parts, and it has to be no mistakes, perfect timing every single time. And we get to see some of the places where the show actually like runs, and there's these like hubs manned by people who have like tons of screens in front of them and buttons and all this shit that we don't know what they do. And we certainly don't think about any of these people when we're watching the show, because to us, it just happens. But there's dozens of people, if not 100 or more, who make the show as it's happening happen. Most important of all is the stage manager, who literally manages the run of show in this like creepy cubicle he has like below or behind the stage. Literally just him alone in a room going, go, 1, 2, 3, go, move it, that, now. And it's like, I never even thought about that. There's somebody whose whole job it is to go, go, do this, do that. And it's like, to me, it's like, oh, they just have a movie that plays on the screen. No, somebody cues it up and they have everything on cue and somebody has to put it up there. I didn't know that. I did not know that. So that kind of gagged me. And this is the part of the documentary that I was really looking forward to. I wanted to know this shit. Who are the people who say, put the UFO on screen? Now I know. It's a guy in glasses who looks like he's from the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. Just in his cubicle under the stage. Thank you. I wanted to know about that. So they tell us that the wings are one of the most difficult stage props to manage. And it didn't surprise me to learn that. I knew from the first time I saw those things, I was like, I would not want to wear that.
They when I saw those UK shows where they were blowing away, I was like, that is really scary.
Yeah. They look like a pain in the ass, not just to wear, but to transport. And it can be dangerous in situations like weather, particularly high wind. So I would be like, I'd essential. Say no. That's the thing.
I'd be like, I'm not doing it.
I'm not doing it. You can't. I wonder if she was there like a lottery? Who has to wear the wings?
We're fighting over who had to do it.
So Andrea says, this is more about how technical the show is. She says she's singing and having to engage and having to figure out what's coming next. She has some flexibility in where she might go, but there's some times where it's very exact. And if she's not standing in the right place, it's actually dangerous. Because there's pyro, you don't want to get blown up. There's the floor moving, you don't want to get sucked into the floor, like what happened to Olivia Rodrigo that one time where she went down into the depths of the stage. It can happen. It can happen to anybody. So Taylor says, I legitimately celebrate every moment where something doesn't go wrong. And I was like,
that helps her be present,
what?
I feel. All the demands help her be like, I can muscle memory this for as much as I want, but there's a certain element of like, I need to be aware.
And I never really had thought about it before. There was always something in my mind where it's like, at a certain point, you just like access autopilot and you just like go, go, go. But it's like, I don't think that ever happens on this tour for anybody. You're always on 100% because it's so down to the second. And we see that next when we get into the wardrobe, which is, you'd never would have thought it, but I got the sense from how they were talking about it and how Taylor talked about it. This was the most stressful part of the show every single night, was getting those quick changes done. So we meet Justina and Shannon, who work in wardrobe, and they help Taylor get dressed in her dressing booths under the stage, of which there are multiple. There are four, which I found really interesting. Where are they? Like, there has to be one right by where she gets dumped out. Then there has to be like maybe two on either side of the back of the stage. But where's the last one? Can't be
near where the speak now part is, where she comes from the back of the stage out there. Probably
that makes
somewhere.
Sense. That makes sense. It has to be back
for
there.
Fearless too.
So Justina says that every wardrobe change is a minute and 15 seconds or less. And the fastest quick change is 39 seconds. She doesn't say which one it is, but the one that they're showing is when she goes in her Evermore dress and then comes out in 1989. But I don't think that's how the run of show is. So I don't know which one she's talking about. I want to know, what's the quickest one? She didn't tell us. And she said she has about 20 of them in the show. 20 quick changes. I've never counted them before. I've never thought about that. That's
insane.
And we get to see Taylor crawling on her pillow that she lands on after jumping under the stage. She, like, leaps up and she rips the Velcro of that Roberto Cavalli dress and just, like, tosses it aside like it's used trash. You have to do what you have to do. And then she leaps onto the, like, little horse thing that she rides backstage. I can't. Every single night, this level of, like, it's like I can't. It's so
crazy.
No,
she doesn't get a moment to catch her breath. Like, the dancers, because they have breaks between numbers, they'll get, like, a song to chill, to, like, have some water and sit down and right. cool off. Even when she's off stage, she's in a quick change, which right. she's, like, running through. So there's no calming down for her.
Taylor says, there were moments where I thought, I don't know if this costume change is going to happen in time. You have no idea the panic of worrying you're not going to be dressed in time for the song to start. And it is that panic that drives me to never be late. And I don't think she ever was. She no. never was. It's incredible. No. It's incredible. She tells the story of when she tripped under the stage and skids the palm of her hand off before Reputation. Everybody remembers those videos of her being all busted. And I thought it was interesting what she said about it. She said, I'm not acknowledging this. Nothing's wrong. It's always been like that. That's the way to do it.
It's the Nothing can go wrong.
Nothing can go wrong. It's always perfect. So after she gets off the stage, after this first rehearsal in Miami, the very first thing that she says is, I made three mistakes. And she wants to immediately meet with the dancers and Amanda to help remind her of the things that she thinks she messed up or forgot. So we see her in the scene rehearsing ready for it in the Midnight's bodysuit. And I was like, this ain't right. We're not supposed to see that. But she goes through all of these things that she thought she messed up. She thought she messed up ready for it choreo. She didn't. She thought she messed up the Fortnite choreo. She didn't. And then she was really concerned about the midnight rain fall, which I kind of understand because you have to fall backwards and hopefully not crack your head open. So that all made sense, but like she was just like in her head about it. She never actually did anything wrong. She was just like completely in her head about it. And again, it just shows how much she cared about the show. Even 100 shows in, she was still this hyper focused.
And she remembers
sure
it.
Perfect.
At the conclusion of the rehearsal, she like makes a mental note. Those are all at very different points in the show.
So the beautiful full moon that Taylor had just been admiring just seconds earlier, the beautiful Florida full moon, has brought in coastal floodings, as it likes to do, as well as gusts of winds up to 35 miles per hour. And we go to the Situation Room, the weather meeting, and it is nothing but men as far as the eye can see. It's a real sausage party. Men love to be fascinated by the weather. They love it. And to their credit, in this situation, they need to be. Because weather in open air stadiums is like a deity that they have to pray to and like hope that everything goes right. It can really destroy shows. This is the first time we see Scott Swift. There he is. He's the weather Situation Room man. Unmiked.
Comment
He's
not required.
He's not allowed to speak.
And they're right.
Not allowed to speak. So they're most concerned about the wind for this first show, as they should be. Taylor says the weather element of playing outdoor stadiums is at times delightful and exciting. At times it is frustrating, and at times it feels really, really horrific. But they show a montage of rain shows since the tour started, and then the dancers with the wings on almost being blown away. Scary stuff. Scary stuff. That would be really bad if that happened. Taylor says that the weather components that she doesn't enjoy are extreme wind, and she talks specifically about the speakers doing this. Don't like it. That would freak the hell out of me. I would not like that at all.
Or the lights above you. No thanks.
Yeah. No thanks. And then she hears the word lightning. And that's when we start to really worry about postponements. Lightning can be very dangerous. But they do have a lightning detection system. Very necessary. They've got meteorologists being beamed in for this. This is all the things that have to happen in a situation to make sure that everybody's going to be safe. You have to beam in the meteorologist. You have to get the lightning detection system. Scott Swift has to be there with his notebook tracking the storm.
Bing Crosby's there too.
Bing Crosby's there. So then Taylor says, then you get situations where sometimes it's kind of wonderful. It's cinema. It's drama. It adds to the show if there aren't other situations at play. And of course, she's referring to her beloved rain shows. And we get to see probably one of the best rain moments of the whole tour at the end of this episode. But before all that can happen, before the show can start, she has to go in and practice her midnight rainfall one more time to put her mind at ease. And of course, she absolutely nails it. She's perfect. She never does anything wrong. She's a diva. And then she goes backstage to rehearse a surprise song. And what really killed me is that she had a JBL speaker hooked up to her piano. and it fried me. JBL, not even a nice one, just JBL, $30, Walmart. Period. What more do you need?
Rough and tumble. More do you Survives need? All weather.
So the surprise song for the show was This Is Me Trying and Daylight Mashup. And she plays it for a little while. And as she's playing it, they start to show Jeslyn getting ready to go on stage. And specifically, she's putting in her hair extensions. This is what I was talking about earlier when it's like, it's never said how much her hair means to her. But like this, like silent moment where it's just like implied. The surprise song playing and she's dutifully putting in her hair extensions so she can still feel like she has all that big, beautiful hair that she had before she got sick. It's very, very powerful. Especially like it's spliced alongside clips of fans coming into the stadium. So we have Taylor rehearsing her surprise song, fans getting ready to come in, Jeslyn and other members of the crew in the band getting ready. And it's all these things happening at once as Daylight, This Is Me Trying plays. I thought it was a very beautiful scene. I really liked it. You know, Daylight, This Is Me Trying, I feel like when it's the kind of thing where you read it and you're like, I don't get it. And then I like heard it and I was like, maybe I do kind of get it. Okay. I liked it. I thought it was good.
We let her rock.
We let her rock. So in the pre-show huddle before everybody goes on, Jeslyn kind of like leads it and she gives a speech. And to Taylor, she says, I admire so many things about you, but there's one thing that I'll never forget. I came to your birthday last year and I actually tripped on the sidewalk coming in and fell on my face in front of paparazzi that were outside because I was dealing with side effects and stuff. But when you introduced me to everyone, you said, guys, this is Jeslyn. We sing together. I said, that's a way to put it. And Taylor says, well, that's exactly what it is. And Jeslyn says, yes, but no one says that. It just says something about who you are and how humble you are and how you like to shed light on people and make them feel bigger than they think they are. And in that moment, I needed that. It's never a me. It's always a we. And it makes me feel like we are the only we that will ever be on the biggest tour in the world. It was powerful. It's never a me. Powerful. It's always a we. And I feel like in the documentary, that has been proven time and time again. She's always saying we. Us. It's only when she's talking about I, it's usually I fucked up. I need to do this. I have to. I need to make sure I'm doing good. But she says like, we need to prepare for the tour. She's always saying we, us. It really makes a difference. This little kind of like thing that she does. Everything's about like the team. It's pretty powerful.
They're not backing singers. They're singing with her.
Yeah, exactly. So they do their pre-show chant, which is fuck it up. Wonderful, amazing, you know, it's camaraderie, teamwork. And about Jeslyn's speech, Taylor says, that was beautiful, and now I'm ready, which I thought was a really cute kind of a moment. Like, she needed the speech to get her ready to go up there and do her thing. Because of the wind, as the show was starting, the dancers with the wings have to have additional dancers to, like, steady and stabilize them as they walk out. But they're still doing it. Everybody's okay. Nobody blows away. Thank God. It's insanity. And Taylor's like, when she comes up, she's doing Miss Americana. You can see the crew is like fighting for their lives to get the dancers with the wings into the back of the stage. I remember that video too, that somebody took of them like not being able to get them in. I didn't think anything of it at the time, but now I know it's because it was trying to blow away in the wind and they couldn't get it back in. So I thought that was pretty funny. They do a mini montage of kind of like the run of show in bits and bobs, the crew opening stage doors, rehearsing backstage, stretching, outfits being moved around. And finally, I loved this little productional piece. They zoom in on the snake face on the gold Reputation bodysuit. It's time. She's being put on the hanger. It's time. It's time. And I love that they made such a big deal out of this in the documentary. Because to me, the Reputation bodysuit, the gold one, was one of the most iconic moments of the entire tour. When that was revealed, was it because we thought Reputation TV was coming? Absolutely. Did they mention that in the documentary? No.
No. Not a word.
No.
Why does everybody want a bodysuit?
It was still gaggy. It was still gaggy nonetheless.
Well, she tries to revise history in episode 4 and say the loudest the crowd ever was for Travis. I'm sorry. No. It was for the Reputation bodysuit. That was the loudest moment of the tour.
So during the Reputation set in her brand new outfit, it starts to rain. One of my absolute favorite moments in the entire documentary is this slow motion of Look What You Made Me Do being done in the rain. It's kismet. And they keep showing clips of like Taylor on the Eras Tour stage. And then all of a sudden they go to Taylor as a kid getting her first guitar. Taylor on the Eras Tour stage. Taylor as a kid. I was like, this is doing something to me psychologically that I don't even know if I can take it. And as this is happening, Taylor says, I'm very well aware of mysterious forces at play that I will never have control of. So all I can ever do is say to myself, I'm going to use every tool in my toolkit. I'm going to paint with every brush I've got. I'm going to be as detail-oriented as possible. I'm going to try as hard as I possibly can to give these people everything that they want. But sometimes there's something that happens that's amazing. That's not something you can plan for and not something you can manufacture. There's still got to be some beautiful mystery to life. And I feel like that's the whole episode. Kismet.
Kismet. Kismet.
That's it. That's it. It's like there are going to be things that you cannot control. You can work as hard as you want. You can do everything in your power. You can be the biggest control freak. But sometimes life is going to
surrender.
And you just have to surrender to the power. Let the rain fall down. And the episode ends with Taylor spinning during August and then that turning into Taylor as a little kid spinning around. Kismet.
And then everybody cries.
Is it clocking to you? Hard work.
Is it?
Hard work. Kismet. Rain. Hard work. Kismet. Reputation outfit. Kismet. It's Kismet.
Well, we will be revisiting the idea of Kismet and hard work in the next episode recap, which is the fateful Tavis Bonanza. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to yet another recap. Patreon.com/Riftologist and evolutionofasnake.com for tour tickets. We'll see you then.